I can't believe you'd come all the way for a party.
Not just any party, a book release party for you, Hardy White, the world's greatest radio something or other.
Thanks, but you're only saying that because you're my editor.
Editor and friend and publisher and possible future partner in a Yum Warm Nuts franchise in the Riverside Mall.
Well, one thing at a time. Now, let me just get through this book party first.
Get through it, and I'll see you for breakfast if the fans don't eat you alive first.
Thanks a lot.
Ah, Hardy White. Question. What's a radio microphone smell like? The breath of 1,000 lonely underpaid fours?
Hardy, could you sign my copy? Sign it, Jack Black. Here's a reference signature.
Well, can't I just sign my own name?
Go to hell!
Hardy, what's shrimp jive mean? Hardy, what's a cubit?
Spread out, fellas. I need to speak with the great man.
Thanks, Phyllis. I was getting overwhelmed.
No problem, HW. It's possible to admire someone and not make a fool of yourself or kill them.
Yeah, no, what?
You know, like a murderous stalker.
Well, that's no good.
I know! Oh, God, you're funny.
Look, I didn't get enough sleep. I'm gonna turn in early.
Well, get some rest.
All right. I want to buy a gun.
Well, you came to the right store. This is a gun store.
Yes.
A gun shop, technically. What kind of gun you need? Hunting? Target? Scribe aside. I want to kill a writer. Well, I don't know what you're saying, but this one fires bullets, and also you can fold it up like a chair that parents take to watch youth soccer. I'll take it. Well, I don't have a case for it.
I can make a case for it.
Just put it in a bag with some bullet munitions. You got it. That'll be $17.
You know, I love these old houses. I can't tell you what period of architecture they're from, but I love them. Maybe Queen Anne? It has the painted balustrades and the round towers and the dentils and all, who knows.
Here's the body, Lieutenant.
He was a writer.
Yeah, Hardy White. He just had a book come out.
Oh, that's some bad luck. To die like that right as you have a book come out.
Happened to Jesus.
It did, sort of. What do you think the killer used? A gun?
Yeah, we're just trying to figure out what kind.
It was a folding one.
A folding one?
Yeah, a folding one. Like the kind you stand right here and unfold before you shoot Mr. White.
How do you know that's what he did?
Because there's a little piece of paper here describing the care and upkeep of your new folding gun. Now, that must have fallen to the ground from the gun, which must have never been used before. And it was tucked inside there, so that the first time you open it, and the killer didn't notice.
Maybe he just bought the gun.
That's brilliant. You know, that's brilliant.
Thank you, sir.
That's very, very astute.
Maybe we should check all the gun stores around here.
Can you do that? Is that a thing that can be done?
Sure, Lieutenant. We do it all the time.
And that would be amazing. Because maybe they'd remember who they sold the folding gun to.
Yeah, that could be really helpful.
It could.
Yes?
Pat McGugan?
Yes. And who are you, may I ask?
I'm Lieutenant Colombo from the Los Angeles Police Department. And I was wondering if I could ask you a few questions about a gun you purchased yesterday, if I could.
Yes, of course. Come in. Please forgive me. I'm having the floors mayonnaised.
I'll be very careful, sir.
I purchased many guns yesterday. To which are you referring?
I'm referring to the folding gun you purchased yesterday at Robert's Gun Shop in Altatuma at 7:23 p.m.
Yes, the folding gun, I remember. I'm making a case for it.
Are you, sir?
Yes. Columbo, is it?
Yes, sir.
Like the Columbo crime family?
No, sir. I'm in the Columbo anti-crime family.
Touché, Lieutenant.
Something that concerns me, sir. The shop clerk at the gun store said that you intended to kill a writer. Did you say that?
I may have. There's no law against it.
Actually, there is a law that says you can't kill writers.
Not that. I meant against saying things, true or not. As far as killing writers, there's morally correct and legally correct, and sometimes the two do not overlap.
I wouldn't know about that, sir. I'm in the legal business and not the moral business.
Obviously.
Is that a lazy Susan?
What?
Is that a lazy Susan?
Yes.
Those are the darndest things. First time I saw one was at a Chinese restaurant with my wife. And the rice is completely on the other side of the table. But then she reaches out and turns this round shelf, and all of a sudden, there it is, rice is right in front of me. And she says, that's a lazy Susan. It's new to me.
What's your point, Lieutenant?
My point? Very good, sir. Very good. Excellent question. I have no point. And that's what's driving me crazy.
Well, now you're driving both of us crazy.
I'm gonna leave you now. So sorry to have disturbed you. Just something I can't figure out.
What's that, Lieutenant?
Why you'd need a folding gun?
I don't know.
Fair enough, fair enough. I'm gonna leave you now. I'm leaving.
Good.
Here I go.
Good. Go.
Lieutenant, this is Lou Register. He was Hardy White's friend and publisher.
Thanks for coming down to the station, Mr. Register.
No problem. I was coming here anyway. Apparently, I won some kind of police raffle I don't remember entering.
Oh, dear. Well, I'll be brief. How well did you know Mr. Hardy White?
Oh, pretty well. I was his friend before I signed him to my publishing company, so I know him pretty good. Never seen him naked, though, so if you have any questions about birthmarks or butt tattoos, I'm no help.
Did Mr. White have any enemies? Were there people who disliked him?
Oh, yes, most, I think. Not him, just his work and personality.
Among those who disliked him, are there any who would be willing to kill him?
I don't know. I guess I could ask, but it seems redundant since he's already dead.
No. I mean, you could have killed him already.
Oh. Some of them don't seem super coordinated or organized, but I suppose they could.
Any names?
Well, there are two people who come to mind.
Who are they?
Well, Pat McGugin, the actor, and also the actor Jack Cassowary. They usually do the lion's share of the killing as in these Columbo episodes.
Well, thank you, sir. You've been a tremendous help.
I have? No one's ever said that to me before. Well, you're welcome. Now, if you would just direct me to the prize room, I'll collect my boat.
Sir, I'm going to give you a tip because I like you. There's no prize. Most likely you have an outstanding warrant.
Oh, thanks. I never thought that warrant would receive such high praise. Also disappointed, though, because I really needed a boat.
For what?
To go on the water or across the water.
Okay, good luck to you.
Thanks.
Well, Lieutenant, do you think he did it?
No. Pat McGugan did it. We know that. We just need to prove it.
If it isn't the ever-present Lieutenant Columbus here to discover the Ameritruths?
It's Columbo, sir. I'm sorry to disturb you on your yacht and all, but I was wondering if you could help me solve a puzzle.
Writer Robert Blank Butler, four letters. O-L-E-N, Olen.
Not that puzzle, sir, but that's very good. It has to do with your whereabouts on the night of the murder.
I already spoke to your department and gave a statement. I was standing in the bedroom of the decedent at the time of the murder, but I had nothing to do with it, nor did I witness it.
I have a hard time believing that.
Believe what you wish, and evidently you believe some fantastical things. But I have had quite about as much of you as I can stand, and I kindly but firmly and with implied malice ask you to take your leave.
I will do that, I promise you, very soon. But I still have some things to clear up. You understand how that is. You're a boating man.
What is it?
Well, we all know you did it. It was in the second scene of the show. Now, why are we pretending that this is not the case?
Prove it. That's the one thing that you can't do, isn't it, Columbo? Prove it.
I can show you the tape.
So?
Of you shooting the victim with a folding rifle that you bought and you own and said when you bought it that you were going to kill a writer.
Circumstantial. I also admit to the killing. I confess. But there's still nothing you can do about it, is there, Lieutenant?
How is that?
You have not made a case.
Ah, but you did. Or rather, you didn't make a case.
What are you talking about?
You said you bought the folding gun to make a case. But you never did. You even told the clerk at the gun shop you were going to make a case.
Get to the point, Lieutenant.
The point. Very good, sir. The point is this. A lazy Susan.
Are you mad?
I understand what you might be thinking, but let me explain. I saw that lazy Susan and I asked to myself, why would a guy who lives alone need a lazy Susan? Unless his house was also a Chinese restaurant. Then it occurred to me that the book Hardy White was writing was about you having an illegal Chinese restaurant in your modernist house.
Cut. Cut. I'm also directing, so cut.
Oh, Columbo, you are addicted to huffing gaslight gas. He is. He loves being gaslit, that Columbo. So he knows, and they're just telling him that the truth is the opposite of what he thinks and the evidence that he has. So he's like, I gotta shake this off or get high on it. I'm going to put Jack Cassidy and Patrick McGoohan in a bag, and I'm going to just get a steady diet of them. Now, this is my own version of Columbo. I'm not doing a Peter Falk impression because I can't. So I'm just doing my version of what I think the character of Columbo would be. And he was created before the actor took the role. In fact, they imagined him to be smoking a pipe. And they changed it to a cigar. Any of this might be not true, but I did read it, and you know how that is. So I am certain that Columbo does do one thing differently. A lot of detective fiction is from the point of view of the detective. You don't know who done it, and you're looking at all the suspects, as they say in England. We say suspects, they say suspect, which I think is sus. And this, with the Columbo, you know who did it. So it really is from the perspective of the killer. You are the killer. And you know things that only the killer knows. Or the other alternative could be you are the ghost of the victim. and you're watching this, like, I wish I could tell you. Or the ghost of Columbo's late partner, who's trying to, you know,
I see it, Columbo.
This is the premise of a British TV show called Something and Something Deceased. Anybody remember that?
I do.
And, British friend. I caught an episode of it when I was over there in London. It was one of those 70s British TV shows where you think, what is wrong with their videotape technology? Bless your hearts. And the sound. But it was very interesting to me that one of it was a detective team, one of whom was dead. And that's so they went on to make a movie where both of them are dead. It was like a cop movie, but they're dead. It's true. They love doing that because you don't have to change much. You just, it's a thing you add on as a pitch. But they're dead like that. And you can take anything, any movie or any idea, and they're dead. Or you can say, here's the idea, and then we flip it. So it's like Columbo, but we flip it. And you don't know who did it. But you do, because either you were participating in it, and then it just, you huff the gaslight, and there's so many amazing things. Now, you say the same actors play a lot of the villains. If you've noticed this, it's Jack Cassidy's played villains a bunch of times, Patrick McGoohan. And you think, well, isn't that crazy? No. We accept that in the Three Stooges. Say, oh, Vernon Dent, he was just over here playing a cop. Now he's playing some kind of thug. Vernon, which is it? Well, he's an actor. And if it was a troupe, you'd be fine with that. Now you're playing another part. So I love that they do that. And I think the only prerequisite is that you are a drunk or something. There's lots of feels like really, I guess cocaine too, it's always there, but as an ingredient, but really alcohol might be the main one in the Columbo. And it's wonderful because a lot of times it can improve your acting. It's that over-articulating, and I think Patrick McGoohan does it. And I think you do it because you're like, well, I don't want to slur because I'm wasted. And you end up being an incredible actor. Now, right now, I am sober. I'm rarely, if ever, drunk. I don't know. It would take a lot. Probably someone holding me down and pouring something in me. I don't want that. And so I probably try not to put myself in positions where that will happen, like laying down on a bar with my mouth open and a funnel in it. So don't do that. Oh, my goodness. My stomach's so sensitive. I can't hardly, even if I'm sitting next to somebody who's drunk. Just the fumes sometimes will get like, you're making me dizzy because I can just, it's coming through your skin. And it's kind of nice because it just smells like something like a stew because I'm smelling some cumin too. All humans give off an odor. Dogs know this. Animals know this. We can't always smell it on one another unless that odor is really super obvious, whether it's a fragrance, a nice perfume. I was in coffee shop recently and someone was wearing something, but much of it, and it was nice, but it was almost too nice because I wasn't close to them. I was thinking, who could this be? But someone has some silage going on, like maybe just really aggressively so, and your silage is annexing my space now, and that's bless you. I know that we all want more, and we all want answers. And that's what Columbo is, too, is greedy for answers. Now, here's a little something. Here's a little skit I'm going to do for you all now. Just imagine, if you will, for a moment, if Columbo discovered America. Well, it might go a little something like this. I haven't done it yet. I'm working on it. He'd be like, I know you live here. I don't know. It'd be something. I'd put a political spin on it, too. It'd be an anti-colonial thing. We should just, you know, with Columbus Day, it's one letter away from just being Columbo Day. And we're all pretty cool with Peter Falk, aren't we? I mean, I'm sure maybe he's problematic home life or something. But just his body of work, I think is solid. And everything. He's been in. Was he in Women on the Verge or something? Anna Wim Wenders thing? I'm asking my producer.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. I don't really watch as much as you think I would. I don't read or watch TV or do anything, and that's truly not something to brag about. So I don't have any screens in the house. You know why?
Why?
They're broken. Because I used them too much. Oh, bless you. I do have books. I do read and watch, but I'm not avid anything. I wish I was avid. I'd like to be more avid. I'd like a hobby that was I could then label myself too, instead of just having a little bit of everything. Because people take their hobbies so seriously now. You feel like, I don't really feel like I can call myself a needle pointer.
No.
My gosh. Photography is interesting because there, you know, there was always this, the amateur professional divide, which we know is there. And now there's a level of amateur, which is, frightening. I don't know. They feel like something out of one of those novels where, what am I thinking of? Like the Golden Compass, where there's just an order of militant priests who, that's what it feels like, a little bit. But some hobbies are more laid back. You know, people want to invite you in, say, I want more people involved in decoupage, or Mod Podge is a TM, but decoupage, or papier-mâché, which are both wonderful hobbies. You can do, here's the thing you can do, because decoupage and papier-mâché have overlap, where you could make a papier-mâché sculpture, and then, as to finish it, decoupage. And I used to love it when I was heavily into Cub Scouts. We would do so many things. They'd say, bring in some old cherished family photos. We're going to cut them up. You know, cut the people out of them. And then we're going to just, you know, glue them on things. And then your granddad or your mom or something's going to be really happy because they'll have this little box that they can keep your teeth in, or I don't even know, or theirs, depending on how old they are. And then there'll be little pictures, blurry pictures of you and taken on impossibly small film that we all had back then. Oh, those were the days, my friend. I thought they'd end back then, but then they didn't. They kept going on, and now I'm drowning in all nostalgia bin, filled up with toys and things there from my youth. I'm choking on it. The past, it's stuck in my throat. Oh, bless you. I'm going to do an all nostalgia show. I was watching a Sopranos clip the other day. Boy, they don't make them like that anymore. And Tony Soprano said, remember when is the lowest form of conversation? Like that, except he said it in his voice. That's the only tough guy. I've got one tough guy voice. Hey! I'm sorry. I don't know who it sounds like. And I wish I could do accurate voices. My hat's off to real impressionists like Fred Travellina. Always my hat's off, and I'm hitting them with it because there's nothing more repulsive to me than doing really accurate ones. The problem with impressions also is keeping them evergreen, you know, because if you're doing celebrities, celebrity changes, that comes and goes. You know, sometimes it's like, hey, I'm going to do, hey, everybody, this is Jack Parr. And they go, oh, you know, you're a couple decades too late or whatever. And someone might not know who it is. Or if you're old and say, I do Mr. Beast. And you go, I don't know who that is. And also, does he have a distinctive enough voice that you'd know? If you listened to him, you'd know. But then there's this is true for those of us who grew up on media, grew up on having a lot of cartoons or voice characterization, also do this phenomenon, which I've discussed in my philosophy classes with my advanced students. And it's this. So you do an impression of, let's say, a cartoon character. But what you don't realize is that that impressionist is doing an impression of a celebrity sometimes. Now, that celebrity could also be doing an affected voice or something they acquired from somewhere else. So give me an example. I will give you an example. I can't. Well, I can't. I'm thinking of one now.
Can you?
I'm trying to think of one. But there's lots of, first of all, I've got a good one. I've actually got a really good one. So, Dawes Butler doing Quisp and many other voices in what is a Jerry Lewis impression.
So it goes like this, you do this!
So that's the Dawes Butler, Jerry Lewis. Then there's Jerry Lewis. I can't do it accurately, but it might be Jerry Lewis.
Come on, God.
Right? Okay. So Jerry Lewis doing that voice. That's just a character. Now, Jerry Lewis stole it from Harry Ritz. Okay? Now, that's three levels of stealing the same sort of voice, where the voice is almost becoming an archetype, and it's not clear where it starts. Now, all along the way, and this goes for music too, this happens, and there's always somebody who claims it, says, well, it's mine, like Led Zeppelin, and go, oh yeah, blues, we did that. So there's always a greedy link in the chain that won't cop to having stolen the voice. You know, Elvis, Professor Longhair, who knows? There's vocal styles, and we hear someone do it, and then we do it, and the origins fade, especially pre-recording and everything. You don't really know where things come from. And even voices are like that. Oh, my goodness, isn't that? Now, I don't know if that's true. It doesn't have to be. I'm not saying it for truth's sake. I'm saying it for, I have a word quota. It's so dumb, but I'm supposed to do a certain amount of time on the radio, and I just know so many, you know, just so many facts. I know just so many facts, and there's not a lot of them. And so I must pad them with non-facts, the way that AI is doing with information. It ran out of information to steal, so now it's making things up and stealing that. Isn't that wonderful? And now that's very similar to what I just said. Everything gets sort of put through a copy machine, and we have to fill things in because the copies fade. And what they get filled in with also gets copied. Are you talking about biology? I am. I teach this in my biology seminars.
Are you? Oh, my gosh. You seem so erudite.
Yes.
Also? Like maybe you have a dissociative disorder or something because of the...
Oh, because I'm speaking to myself in different voices.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
I'm not trying to diagnose.
I know. I know, but it's striking.
Yeah. One gets the impression you do it when you're alone.
I do. Unfortunately, I do it while I'm alone. And you're going to have to accept my word because there's really no one can prove it except my dog. I do speak for my dog. So you know I lost my dog. Not lost. I know where he is. He's dead. Orwell. And he was a hound. He was a beagle. But he was a super imperfect-looking beagle. You know how they get their standards? Well, he didn't really meet the standards. But my favorite thing about him is he really advocated for himself relentlessly. And I had great respect for that. I felt like we had a very balanced relationship, he and I. We were equals. Now, my remaining pet, because my cat also died right around the same time, I must have gotten them all right around the same time as what I'm thinking. Don't do that. Stagger your pets or else you're going to have just a wave of loss. I had that with my great-great aunts. I was like, man, I'm so lucky to have these living great-great aunts, I thought when I was young. And then, poosh! they're all gone. And then you get new great-great aunts. No, it doesn't work that way. But you just replace them with hobbies. My remaining dog is Cookie, and she's so sweet. And she's not as bright as Orwell was, or she doesn't really advocate for her own. She just kind of gives you a pitiable look and wants to kiss up and everything. And you say, "That's bless you. You don't have to, though." But when I speak in her voice, I tend to, to me, she uses words just as padding. Like there's some words that she just says because they sound like words. She doesn't have a full grasp of the language. A lot of times that little tiny little kids learning to talk will do that, where they get the sound of it first. And you'll see this on cute little clips online of the children going, "I got busted, and you go, "Wow, that sounds just like an angry adult. They're getting such good role modeling." So the dog does that too, I believe, and has latched on to the word "say."
"Say, say, and I say."
Like that.
I say, food.
Like that. And just every once in a while, there'll be a noun that's pertinent with padding. And then she'll say,
"And I say, then. Outside, Pepe."
Like that. And you say, "That's a really obnoxious voice." Listen, it's the way I communicate with my dog, and no one's around, and I don't feel any need to defend it. I am in touch with so many parts of myself. Stop it. I really am, internally. I don't know what they mean. In touch doesn't mean that you understand. I mean, you could have a, you know, I say, "I'm in touch with my uncle." All right. "I don't understand him." "I don't either. But we stay in touch." That kind of thing. So I'm in touch with aspects of myself and my personality and memories and all that kind of thing. Do I understand them, or do I know myself better because of that? No, not necessarily. Let's say you have an old house, an old grand mansion, and you go in it and you live there for a while and with a little kid. I don't know if it's your kid. I don't know how he's there or what their gender is even. Just a little child running around. And they go exploring. Now, they will find rooms that you will never find. They won't understand what that room is. They won't have any kind of concept of what the architect was thinking, or maybe it has some historical significance. This is where they hid runaway slaves, or this is where they hid merchants when they are out of cookies. A lot of times people get really mad and want to kill grocers if they ran out of something. I don't know if it's still that way. And it's like, "Oh, I came here specifically for olives and you don't have any." That happened to me when I was working in a shop. And I really felt like, "I don't know what you want me to do. I can't make any olives. Yes, I can. Hang on. Give me a second." And I went in the back and I made olives out of doo-doo. No, I didn't. But I can't make them. And I'm sorry. Would you like me to do some sort of a penance? Is that how you say it? Because I will gladly flagellate myself because there's no olives. Even though it was out of my control, it's not even my shop. I just work here. But thank you for venting. And I can't even imagine. You're yelling at me like this for not having olives. I can't imagine how you yell at your family for deep, significant emotional wounds. I wouldn't want to be there. And bless them. And I hope that you find peace or die. One of the two, but you're causing harm. So peace. I'm always vote for the peace. Well, first of all, you're going to die anyway, you know. And for some, it doesn't get here soon enough just because of what a menace they are, you know. But wouldn't you rather them repent? I would. I would love you to. It's never too late. I am not capable of repenting. Why? I will never accept that I'm wrong in any way. All right. Bless you. All right. All right. What are you going to do about it? I don't know. I feel like Columbo. What? I'm going to go watch some Columbo. Oh, I thought you meant you felt like you were Columbo. I also feel like I'm Columbo. But it's just like, it's one of those ambiguous things where you go, "I want some Chinese." And you go, "Well, food?" You have to be very specific. Now, I was thinking investments, but food would be fine too. Any kind of Chinese investors. A lot of people have been investing in my show. So I want to invest in the show. I want to invest. Why don't you issue stock? So I went and I got this template for old-timey stock certificates. They used to issue those when you buy stock. Now everything's online, but it used to be, you know, you buy stock and you'd get these. So here's your certificates have come by certified mail. And you sign for them. And it says, 10 shares in Standard Oil of Slovakia, of Schmoland, or something stooge-like. And then you'd have your 10, 20 shares of Standard Oil on a certificate that looks just like your diploma. So there you go. Then you accidentally sell your diploma, thinking that it's Philip Morris stock. Oh, my goodness. But it's not. It's a master's diploma from a guy named Philip Morris, who I guess now is, I don't know how he's going to prove that he has an advanced degree. So, look, I got shares in a cigarette company. If only that were enough to get a university job. I'm always looking for one. I know that a lot of you work at universities, but nobody seems to have the power to hire anybody. That's very interesting to me.
Yeah, we have to do that as a committee, yeah? And then that usually gets ignored by the dean.
All right, and then what does the dean answer to?
Other people.
And then who ultimately makes the decisions?
No, we do.
I don't understand.
Not really. I don't know. Maybe we don't.
No one is in charge, which is lovely. I like that. It's not like a ship where somebody's, you can go and you say, who's steering this ship?
I am. Captain Steubing, Merrill Steubing of the Princess Fleet ships. I used to be in news. I was in the newsroom.
Mayor, he was, and then he captained ships.
Look.
That's another thing where you're conflating the actor. See, everything doesn't happen in the same world. Just because it says, like, you know, oh, Quinn Martin. It's not some Quinn Martin planet. Where they're all the same, right? It's Quincy is also a sloppy roommate. Same person. No, it's the same actor. And just like I do different parts. So I come on here and I do Hardy White, which is me, do myself. And then I'm on a lot of other radio stations doing other characters. Who? Gruffy Pineapple. What? Gruffy Pineapple. I do a character called Gruffy Pineapple. And how's he sound? Give me a second. I'd rather not share it. I'm thinking about it, but then I go, then everybody'll know that I'm Gruffy Pineapple. And not somebody else. I wanted to remain a little mysterious. Who is that voice I'm hearing? When I was young and I would listen to the radio and I'd be driving somewhere, say, I got to get to Panama City to get rid of this body. And I'd put the radio on for company. And sometimes it would be a remote kind of radio station come somewhere on the coast of Florida. And it sounded something like this.
Her.
I don't know. It just was somebody on the radio and they would be talking about things. Maybe colon health was one of the first things I remember hearing. And say, why is this person talking about colon health on the radio? And then I thought, well, why not? They obviously bought a radio station, and they realized just how relentless the requirement is to be constantly broadcasting. And so they just get anybody to come on and speak about something, because they've got to be on the air. And a lot of times you play music. That's a big one. You say, well, play music. Play old, my idea was play old television shows. And you say, well, a lot of that is visual. I know, I love it. There's a lot I don't mention about what I do on the radio. And one of the things that I do is I do soundtracks. I do television soundtracks, not radio plays. I do television plays on the radio. How is that different? Well, you can't see most of it, what's going on. So most of it is not, you can't see. You just hear people going, dirt, dirt, dirt. So it's just because that's what fascinates me. When I watch some of these old shows, I'm not paying attention. I'm paying attention, but I'm paying attention. I'm listening. I'm not watching at all. It depends who directed, how good it looks, set design, that has a lot to do with where I'm actually watching it. Most of the time I listen because it seems to me that, especially the episodes where they didn't think them through, a lot of looping. So what does that mean? It means the dialogue was put in later. They're just doing an extra layer in their studio of what they said live. So just going over the live sound because it was crummy or something. So the difference would be, you know, hey, Lieutenant Columbo, this is my, in a big house, but I sound like this, even though I'm far away.
Otherwise, it might be like this, Columbo. I see you're here again.
Yes, I'm over here. There's too much room.
There's too much room.
Let's go back into the studio and add it. So it'd be like that a lot of times. And I like that because I hear that and I go, oh, I hear what you're doing now. Now we're back in the studio and that is my domain. Not out there on the mean streets of Los Angeles in the 70s getting those great shots. Oh my gosh. I wouldn't mind that. A lot of you do Scottish Tom made a Friends. He had access to all the Friends episodes, so he cut out all the Friends and just had called it, I think, No Friends or Friendless or something. I would like, it wouldn't be bad to take one of those 70s shows, like Ironsides or Columbo, and just take out all the people and just have it be Los Angeles. And I would be happy. Rockford Files, I mean, I like these television shows, but I really like the stuff in between. Even the Jim Varney one. It's just a very, you know, there's gritty parts. There's weird parts. There's all kinds of interesting architecture. Like what? Like Googie. Googie architecture. That mid-century space age kind of Googie architecture. There's also Dingbats. Dingbats architecture. Those are those houses with little asterisks on them or something. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where you park underneath? You're making it up. Not making it up. I'm kind of an architecture stan. Stan, you know. I'm your biggest fan, Eminem. I'm in a van. I stabbed my girlfriend. Like you said. We should be together. My name's Stan. I mentioned my van. I'm a fan. I have a plan to be with you. I miss you. I don't even know you. I guess it's parasocial. I'm emotional. I don't know. I can't do it. But that's where it comes from. And that. The Dido makes me want to do some carpentry joints or something. Is that the same word? I do a lot of word puzzles, but I don't know what they mean. So I know that's a word, especially that spelling bee one. You don't even have to know what the word means. You know, you just get the letters and you go, Plupal, is that something? Palalb, is that anything? Dingalap, and they go, very amazing. I just, you know, it's just permutations. I can do that's how I passed geometry. You can get through geometry just by trying everything. And then you go, well, it must be this. And I couldn't do that with like algebra and all, but angles, it goes, Proof. I like to prove things. Do you? No, you know that. I feel like the proof is emotional. Feelings just feel right. And that's plenty. I just, I'm always reluctant to say I'm in a good or bad mood. I really don't like to label my feelings because they change so quickly. And I think sometimes if you say it, if you say it, you seal it. I don't know. But I'll tell myself things, and I will keep telling myself that thing, and that becomes reality. I'm not even sure whether it's true anymore. I'm having a bad day. You label something like that, and I mean, I don't want to be. I know this is trite, and it sounds like. But if people were actually listening and acting on very, very basic wisdom, or are just even like children's Sunday school lessons, I don't think we'd be where we are. And what I do believe is that there is, it's almost like everybody burned up all the Aesop fables. And you just think, well, everybody knows that kind of sour grape stuff. Now they don't, suddenly. So don't feel bad about, you know, going around and dispensing what seems like trite wisdom or Sunday school lessons or, you know, saying things like slow and steady wins the race, because people don't necessarily know it. Information does disappear. Wisdom does. And we don't know a lot as human beings, right? But we know things like it's probably not a good idea and it's not worth it on balance to play mumbly peg. Now that's where you see how fast you can stab a knife between your fingers on a table. Why? Don't do it. So I'm quick and I can do it. You're going to stab your finger. Then what? Then what? Then you're going to involve me? Are you going to bleed on my carpet? Sir. No mumbly peg. I got signs up all over the house. You can't play any kind of games that where if you make a mistake, you bleed. Well, there's some games where you bleed even if you're not making a mistake. You know, like fighting and everything. It's so weird. That's a sport. I know. I mean, I guess it makes sense, but... it's how it feels like fighting to me feels like how what sports devolve into, you know. I mean, it's like, oh, now they're fighting because they're just taking the competition personally, or they feel slighted, you know. They feel like they're insults when they have a point, when the other team scores a point. They feel like that affects their self-worth, and so they want to destroy this object that is their enemy. And then the sport devolves into that. That's why people don't like to play games with me, because I don't care. I don't care, and I don't care who wins. And people, that's sometimes not fun for people. I understand that. But there is a fine line between play and war sometimes. You know, I always thought about that with people reenacting wars. I think, well, that's, you know... feels like it's always too soon, because there's wars recently. Even if the Civil War wasn't recent, you know, there are still things going on like that. But whatever. So you want to dress up and play that. And then they get progressively more realistic, where everything has to be real. And then I figure ultimately they'll be shooting one another and killing one another. Maybe make a movie like that called Reenactors, and where reenacting is the actual thing. Then again, and that's something I just came up with. That I'm thinking of writing that down. You know, I'll tell you what separates me, a healthy, normal person, from somebody who would then take that and write it up and try to make, is probably cocaine. I use my own confidence and reason, but if I was to take something that would, maybe this is a good idea. That, I just can't tell you how much of entertainment that's driven. When I watch television or movies, I think, how did this make it this far? This is a lot of things. I'm not going to name names, but it just seems like a lot of things are just cocktail party jokes that just got really out of hand. I think maybe because people are grasping for an idea that's going to deliver them. That's really going to change their lives. I'm going to do a story or a movie, and it's going to propel us all into the next level where no one will doubt my worth. Everyone will treat me not just like a human being, but like a special privileged one, like a king, perhaps. I am above the law and the laws of arts. No. That's why I'm so happy in the form that I have chosen to express myself, which is the long, there's a word for it, because there's a word for everything. And I think it's a compound German word, and it means to take the ideas and words that you wish to express out of your figurative rectum the way Houdini would a skeleton key. And that will be the source of the ideas and the art pertaining to the shows and the entertainment and the record labels. And we're adding all that together and the layers, and there, that's what have you, is my form. I get up in the morning and I don't usually have diarrhea because there's not millions of dollars riding on a project, or no one's counting on me. And the way, I mean, WFMU is, they go, we want you to show up and do your shows and all that kind of thing. And then occasionally they're like, hey, we need you to respond to an email. And I get that. And I get that. And if you're there, they're, you know, if you're a DJ, they're like, you know, everybody cleans the toilet at some point. Everybody does. Everybody gets dirty. Ken, right down to, oh, don't say my name. All the way to the top, you know, Michelle, Ken, all the way down to, don't go, don't say my name. All the way down to little lowly, please don't. You don't. No, it's not hierarchy like that. Oh, my goodness. We're all in this together. I definitely feel that way with listeners. You know, not everybody should get on the radio. And I'm not saying you're special if you do. It's just not everybody wants to be honest. You think you do until you have a show. Then you go, oh, my God, how long can I do this? And you pick a genre like I'm going to do, you know, psychedelic surf funeral music. And then after a couple of weeks, you're like, oh, God, what have I done? You know, you're going to have to recording your own. So I've always believed in pacing myself. And all radio projects that I do, I come in, I set that bar. I don't even set it on anything. I just take the bar and put it on the floor. And I go, that's the bar. And I'm going to step on. I'm really going to step on it or over. I don't even know if I'm supposed to go under or under. I don't know if the bar is a limbo thing or a high jump thing. But I put it right down on the floor anyway. And I don't even know it's there. There is no bar. I take it away. I don't need it. It's spelled B-A-R-R-E, too. I don't know if it is or not. But I don't have any standards. That way, you know, there's these, because these expectations will kill you. And then you think, well, my worth is contingent on everything I do being a big hit. The big ideas. You know, I think about this with new movie directors who have like, you know, those are huge projects. Can you imagine being in the one or the middle of one? You go, this is my worst. I got to finish my worst movie. And then I got to sit there after my worst movie's done and have that be the most recent thing I've done. Then I got to start on another one, coming into it feeling like shapoopy. Now, how do I do that? Well, I'd say switch to radio. I love it. If I get an idea, I get it out. And I feel like your idea, movie auteur, is like a stone, a kidney stone, or the any kind of wee-wee stone, a stone that you have to, has to go out a smaller hole, you know? It's like the door to your studio is a normal-sized door, but then you made this giant rock sculpture. And to get it out the door, you're going to tear part of the door frame, and there could be blood and pain. Now, I make my little, my door, my studio is always way bigger than the piece I make, ambition-wise. So my ambition is small. I get things done. I communicate. And I feel like I reach people. Here's the downside. I figured out this the other day. I have hours and hours and hours and hours of radio. Me speaking. A lot of people do. A lot of actors have more time on the screen or anything than I do also. But I do have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of me speaking, telling stories, saying things about myself. And AI, I've said this last week, I think, too, could just be me. But one thing that it will never have is that I have is...
What? What?
Is...
What?
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 I'm trying to think. Something... No, we're the same. But that's okay. That's all right. But when I die, you'll just have more. It'll be wonderful. It won't be original. It probably wouldn't have been what I would have done. But it might be comforting or something like that. And don't we all want to live around the stuffed remains of those we miss? I hope that I've given you something. You know, my ambition might be small as far as what I want to create for you, but it's not small as what my goal wants to be, because there's nobody on the radio or the television that has a bigger goal than I do. I know that. I know that. How do you know that? I don't know. I'm pretty sure, because why would they? Seems crazy. But I'm really trying to transform something. I'm trying to make some kind of change in you. Not everybody or things or just you. Just one person, maybe. And to be able to say something that's so valuable that it mitigates pain for you or suffering, it diminishes it. Well, that's very lofty. I know. Would you like to do it for everybody? I don't think it's possible. You know, and I think even one person, that's pretty ambitious. But if you can take a heart and help it through, or hold a hand through this crazy experience of being alive, of being mortal, of being organic, of coming into existence and then breaking down and then fading from existence, but with all these memories and all these things in your head, why? Why are they there? Why is the past still with me? Why am I clinging? Why am I creating longing by doing the one thing that the brain is meant to do? It feels like a curse. The more I think, the more scared I am. Can you help me, Hardy? I will try to help you. Put your heart, imagine your heart in my hand, and my hand is warm so your heart won't get cold, and shove it back in your chest. But this time, you feel like you just ate candy. Does that do it? Oh, my gosh. It does, doesn't it? Bless you. I love you. Stranger loves you because you're lovable. You don't know me. That's why I love you. And you don't know yourself. So love your unknown self as well. You don't have to know anybody to love them. And the less you know, the better. And you know yourself the least of all, so you must love yourself the most. You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County. And online, WFMU.org, worldwide. Did I say New York City? I did. And Rockland County. And online, worldwide, at WFMU.org. Freeform radio, the way it was free and formed. And I love you, and stay tuned for Mahogany. And bless you.
name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twin's 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 name was Ebony.
Lay down, baby. 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 I've been waiting for this a long time. I feel like doing something freaky tonight. Is that alright with you? Why don't you undress? I feel like tasting your body. Ooh, you look so sexy, girl. Come on, baby. Let's make love. Feeling when you touch me in there. Don't hold back what you feel.